yourselves.
Why is the world's largest Christian denomination spending a lot of time and money studying the possibility of extraterrestrial life? I'm Derek Gilbert. Welcome to A View from the Bunker. That's our topic for discussion today as we bring to the table a gentleman we've come to know over the last couple of years and really respect his work as a researcher, a thinker, and a writer, and as a friend. He's the man behind the website logosapologia.org, co-author with Tom Horn of the popular yet controversial book, Petrus Romanus, The Final Pope is Here, and the new book, available now, Exo Vaticana. It is our pleasure, our honor, to welcome back to the bunker Chris Putnam. Chris, thanks for joining us today, and thank you for your patience.
Well, absolutely, Derek. It's my pleasure to be back on this show with you. It's one of my favorite shows to be on.
Well, appreciate that. We're a little late getting started today, as I was distracted by some of the cares of the world. We won't go into that, but Chris is being very gracious in rearranging his schedule to accommodate my lack of home remodeling skills. the book Exo Vaticana takes a similar tack to Petrus Romanus in that it makes the Roman Catholic Church somewhat the focus of your book, but from a different perspective this point. The subtitle of Exo Vaticana is Petrus Romanus, Project Lucifer, and the Vatican's Astonishing Exo-Theological Plan for the Arrival of an Alien Savior. In a nutshell, and we'll dig into a number of things that have hit the news recently in the scope of exo-politics, if you will, what is your take, your view, what is the overview of Exo Vaticana?
Well, you know, the impetus for the book is really, you know, the sorts of statements that the Vatican has made out in the popular media. You know, it only takes just a brief Google search to find all sorts of articles about baptizing extraterrestrials and things like of this nature. And these are all coming from the Vatican Observatory Research Group, acronym VORG, you will be assimilated. and I had some fun with that in the book.
Sure.
But these guys have been out, you know, making these sort of statements in the media. And then, you know, it's just a pretty interesting question. Why is one of the world's largest religious organizations maintaining a state-of-the-art observatory on top of Mount Graham in Arizona, which is, you know, only really like 100 yards from the most powerful telescope in the world, period, the Large Binocular Telescope? It's right next door. And, you know, why are they hosting an astrobiology conference in Rome at the Pontifical Academy of Sciences in 2009? You know, seriously studying the question of alien life. Do they know something? Well, you know, it's not us, you know, just making speculation. We're just responding to what's already out there. Now, there's some pretty astounding statements out there. Monsignor Corrado Balducci, I think he passed away in 2007 or something like that, so he's no longer with us. But he is, Monsignor is a title. An honorary title given to you by the Pope. So John Paul II made him a Monsignor. He was the demonologist and exorcist for the Diocese of Rome. So, you know, if you wanted a opinion on demonology or any issue like that from a Roman Catholic, it would be hard to find a fellow with more authority. And he went on Italian television in the 90s saying that the existence of these beings is a certainty. Now, I mean, he was very clear about that. Now, in the new movie, Sirius by Stephen Greer, it features a scene with Corrado Balducci and literally, quote, "there will be others who are far superior besides us," end quote, is the caption. You know, he's speaking in Italian and they actually have a caption and that's exactly what it says. He's talking about superior beings, you know, coming to Earth. So, you know, this is the sorts of things that they're putting out right in the public. This stuff isn't secret. So, you know, we decided to dig into it. So Tom and I actually made a trip to Arizona and toured the facility up there. And then, you know, of course, dug in and did a lot of research. So the book does cover the Vatican and their interest, but it also is a book about UFOs and aliens and astrobiology. It covers a lot more than, you know, just, you know, the Catholic element of it. But that's kind of the launching point for it. And, you know, even ufologists, if you look at the book After Disclosure by Richard Dolan and Jim Mars and those fellows, they actually, you know, have a little section in that book that says the Roman Catholic Church is positioning itself to be the religious authority to announce disclosure. So it's not lost on the secular UFO community either. So everyone has noticed that they are positioning themselves for this.
You know, a lot of people that you raise this topic, UFOs, the possibility of extraterrestrial life, even people in the church would tend to view that topic as somehow separate from the theological work that churches are supposed to do. Where is the point of confluence or convergence, I should say? Where does the study of UFOs converge with theology?
Well, there are some really interesting questions that pop up. Now, I make several arguments in the book, but you know, just to cover to answer your question, I mean, there is a thing called exotheology. Now, this is, you know, this external, X-O, this prefix is basically just anything outside of, you know, our domain. And that's where the title of the book comes from. But, you know, in theology, it's how would Christian theology handle the existence of a legitimate, you know, intelligent extraterrestrial life? How would we handle that? You know, so that's those are some interesting questions. And Dr. Michael Heiser's done some good work on that. A Lutheran theologian named Ted Peters has issued some scholarly writing on that material. You know, the thing that I found really interesting is the government actually sponsored a conference down in Florida and paid a German theologian and philosopher, you know, $100,000 or something to put on a talk about would ETs be saved. You know, this is DARPA and our government paid for this. And you just wonder, why are they interested in the salvation of ETs? I mean, it doesn't seem to me that they particularly care about their own salvation. So you wonder, what are they thinking when they, you know, put out the money for these sorts of things? So it's actually a question that our tax dollars have been funding a little bit there. And I mentioned that in the book and cite those studies. And incidentally, the guy that did that presentation determined that he didn't think they would be, because he thought that Christ died for man on earth. And that's pretty much my position. But, you know, there's some verses in Colossians that do tend to kind of give that a cosmic scale. And it says that, you know, that for everything on earth and in heaven, you know, would be reconciled to him somehow. So it's possible that it could apply beyond mankind. But, you know, the position I take in the book is that what we know about the UFO phenomenon and the entities that people are interacting with. Now, I don't doubt that at all. You know, I think that there's something very real going on with the abduction phenomenon. I think that some of the contactee phenomenon is something real going on. Now, is it space aliens? I don't think so. And, you know, there's quite a few ufologists that have concurred with that. And so, you know, from what I can see, it's deceptive, okay? It's intentionally deceptive. It always has been. And the story changes to kind of match, you know, stay two steps ahead of the technology of the time period. And, you know, this has been documented quite well by you know, a lot of researchers going back to John Keel, even J. Allen Hynek. And Jacques Vallée is somebody who I read a lot of. Now, Jacques Vallée's worldview is basically kind of occultic, I would say. He's a trained scientist, And, you know, the reason why I find him the most interesting is that he's one of the most qualified of the bunch. When you look at somebody that has a master's degree in astrophysics, a PhD in computer science, he's been working on the phenomenon since Blue Book. He worked with Hynek on Project Blue Book. So he's been around a long time.
Oh, yeah.
He has his training, and he's got a really interesting analysis.
He was the inspiration for the character in the movie E.T., played by Francois Truffaut.
You mean Close Encounters.
Close Encounters. I'm sorry, not E.T., but Close Encounters of the Third Kind, the character played by Francois Truffaut, the French expert. So Jacques Vallée has been around quite a long time and a respected researcher, but one from, if not a secular worldview, or at least a secular worldview, if not, as you suggest, occultic.
Yeah, I think so. He definitely believes that reality is a lot bigger than your typical naturalist believes. He collects all kinds of weird books and things like that. So I wouldn't put him in the naturalist camp at all. But he's not a Christian by any means. But his analysis does intersect in interesting ways, and we'll get into that a little later, I guess.
Sure. Yeah, I do want to talk about that because it's. He was one of the secular researchers whose analysis indicated to me that there were at least some people who were not openly Christians who were willing to look at this and consider the possibility that aliens were not extraterrestrial but interdimensional.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I was tracking. So, you know, as far as exotheology, it covers, you know, the existence of a genuine alien intelligence. Now, so I almost consider that a separate issue from the phenomenon that we are dealing with UFOs and abductions and whatnot, because I really don't think those are space aliens.
Hmm.
I do think that they are the same beings that have been classically identified as demonic entities. And I think there's a really good case for that. And we can get into that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know, as far as exotheology, you know, you look at issues like, well, you know, Jesus incarnated as a human being on Earth to die for mankind. So if there were genuine aliens, would he have to incarnate on their planet? So there's that kind of question. There's mm-hmm. the incarnation. It also brings up issues with the image of God because, you know, humankind is exceptional because God gave us his image. Now, there's, you know, vigorous debate in theological circles of what that entails. Dr. Heiser advocates what we call the functional view,
mm-hmm.
which means we are God's representatives on Earth. Now, you know, classically, a lot of people have tried to make it certain attributes like intelligence or, you know, the ability to reason or communicate or perhaps to commune with God. Now, you know, Heiser would argue that, you know, if we make it something like intelligence or communication or something like that, then if an alien shows up and they have the same sort of intelligence, does that mean that we're not unique anymore? Now, the functional view, you know, in Genesis, when God said that we were made in his image, the very next thing he did was give us dominion over the garden to care for the earth and fill the earth. So, you know, we would be God's representatives on earth. We mm-hmm. are his imagers. So that, you know, if you think of it in that line, then it's really nothing that could be usurped because, you know, we are his image on the earth.
So theoretically, then God could have created any number of other planets with other species that are his imagers on those planets.
That could be, you know, possible. Okay. Yeah. But, you know, I tend to view those questions as almost separate issues because I haven't seen any convincing evidence for a genuine extraterrestrial
mm-hmm.
being that, you know, is in the same sort of status that we are. I think what we're seeing are, you know, are demonic supernatural type beings that are trying to lead people astray. And so, you know, based on that, you know, I don't try to go from the Bible doesn't say they exist, so they don't exist. I'm not making an argument from silence, but what the Bible does say, you know, if you just argue from what the Bible does say, yeah, it's silent on aliens, okay? I admit that. But what it does say is that we should expect some sort of great deception. Now, you know, mm-hmm. it seems to fit really nicely into that pocket.
The Vatican's approach toward researching this this topic, given that they've spent a great deal of money on their large binocular telescope near-infrared utility with camera and integral field unit for extragalactic research, or Lucifer.
Right.
It sounds like a government project where they come up with some really long title to justify a cool sounding acronym. Setting aside the question of why they chose Lucifer as the title or as the name of this observational facility, are they approaching this topic and researching all aspects of it? I ask this because, you know, we've seen stories over the last couple of years about the Vatican sort of reemphasizing the training and equipping of exorcists to be prepared for, you know, duty, I guess. Are they looking at this as a spiritual aspect, or are they just considering the aspect of the question of as you say, whether extraterrestrials can or are saved?
You know, I think that this is where you're going to see the fact that the Vatican really is not the united front that they present themselves to be. Typically, the sorts of criticisms that Protestants get from Catholics are that, well, there's all these denominations and you're not unified and church is supposed to be unified. Well, there's a lot of division within Roman Catholicism as well. They just don't talk about it very much. And, you know, like you said, there have been a lot of articles in recent years about them having to train all kinds of new exorcists because there has been a, you know, dramatic increase and demonic possession and phenomenon. Mm. Now, what I find particularly troubling about this thing with the aliens is that, you know, Christian apologists and scholars that look at this area, Dr. Walter Martin, Dr. Timothy Daly of the Family Research Council, Dr. John Weldon, Dr. John Ankerberg, Dr. Chuck Missler, even Zola Levitt wrote a book in the 70s about this phenomenon. And they all see connections to demons and biblical end time prophecy without exception. And then you have John Keel, who was, you know, pretty secular. He thought that they were demons. He wrote that ufology is just a branch of demonology. That's what John Keel said.
Mm-hmm. And he's the guy behind the Mothman prophecies, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Okay. And his book, it's called Operation Trojan Horse. It's a classic, and it really, I agree with almost everything in there. And he makes a lot of effective arguments, I think, that these probably can't be space aliens. I mean, one of the arguments that John Keel used, I think it's still a really good argument. You look at, you know, UFO literature and books from the past, and you look at all the sorts of sizes and shapes of ships. Now, I mean, there are literally thousands of different flying saucers. So you have to imagine, do they use a different style ship every time they come here? And or they're like, you know, millions of different kinds of aliens come in here? You know, why all the different models of spaceships? And why is there very little consistency? You know, some of them are consistent from time to time, but if you look at the sheer volume over time, it appears to me that these things are, you know, kind of transmorgative, you know, they are able to just sort of change at will.
Transmogrify, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's the word he used. It's kind of a strange word, transmorgify.
I only remember that because it showed up in the Calvin and Hobbes cartoon strip pretty regularly.
Okay.
Yeah, Calvin got into a cartoon, you know, got into a cardboard box as transmogrifier and came out as, you know, whatever he wanted. So
yeah, I mean, that doesn't mean that they're illusory. Doesn't mean people are hallucinating, but it also means that there's something different than just a nuts and bolts thing like a F-16, okay? And a lot of the UFO literature and the sorts of things that people say supports that notion. Now, what I was getting at, though, with the Vatican is that, so you had these guys like Guy Consolmagno, who's an astronomer. He thinks like a naturalist. You know, he's got his PhDs in astrophysics and physics and hard science. So he probably doesn't, you know, typically, he probably doesn't even think that their evidence is all that compelling for aliens. But he'll go out in the public and make all kinds of statements about baptizing an ET no matter how many tentacles it has. Sure. But then you have their demonologist, Monsignor Corrado Balducci, you know, and he says that he wants to be the spokesperson for the star peoples who are part of God's glory. Now, that was a direct quote that he gave at a UFO convention, and the people he was speaking to are UFO convention people, you know, really new agey people. You know, so he was speaking of, you know, the same entities, the grays, the ones that are abducting people. And, you know, he's saying that they're all just part of God's glory and they're the star peoples. And, you know, and then he would say things like, okay, here's a direct quote. This is from, you know, a top-level exorcist demonologist. These things are not demonic. They are not due to psychological impairment, and they are not a case of entity attachment, end quote. This is what Balducci says. Now, why does he say that? Well, the Catholics have this theology that demons cannot manifest physically. And the thing that is really disturbing about it, it's because there's so much emphasis on tradition within Roman Catholicism. It's all stacked and built up over time. And it goes back to Aquinas. Thomas Aquinas wrote that angels and demons were necessarily spiritual beings. Now, when you kind of dig into why Aquinas thought that, it's because he really believed Aristotle's cosmology and physics. Now, Aristotle had divided the world up into air, fire, water, you know, and earth. Now, because angels weren't on the earth, and see, in Aristotle's cosmology, all elements attract to each other. So all the earth is on the earth. And so if you're up in the air, then you have to be made out of air, basically, because earth would be attracted to earth. And, you know, that's how he explained gravity, basically. So because the angels were above the earth in the heavens, they couldn't be physical. And that was really just based on this pagan, you know, four-part physics. And so just really what Aquinas was arguing was based on that. And so it's kind of perplexing to me that we still have, you know, the Catholics really, they have a hard time changing everything because they can't change because they have all these doctrines where they don't make errors and they're infallible and, you know, tradition stacks on tradition. And so going all the way back to Aquinas, now there's no way an angel can manifest physically. But then you look in the Bible and you see things like the angels that destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, you know, when they met with Abraham, they ate with them, you know, and then the book of Hebrews says many have entertained angels unaware. Now, how could that happen if they were just some kind of ethereal, mystical, you know, apparitions? That just doesn't make any sense. So it seems to me that these entities could certainly present themselves as space aliens and pull this sort of ruse off if that's what they wanted to do to perpetrate a deception. I don't think that that's outside the purview of biblical theology at all, but the Catholics would say so. So for that reason, they just exclude the demonic right out of hand.
Going back to the view of secular researchers, Jacques Vallée, you mentioned, draw some parallels between his analysis of the phenomenon and what we find in New Testament theology. Talk about those. Where are the points of similarity between the work of guys like Vallée and what we see about the demons in the New Testament?
Yeah, this is one of my favorite parts of the research. There's a chapter in the book called The Powers and Principalities Planetary Control System. Now, yeah, I read several of Jacques Vallée's books in the research for this book, and there was actually one book. It was done by a Portuguese scholar, and it was called Fatima Revisited. Now, Vallée, and this is a recent book where they actually were looking at the miracle of the sun in Fatima, Portugal, and kind of parsing it through a ufological lens. So Vallée's new partner is Dr. Eric Davis, and they wrote an essay in that book called Incommensurability, Orthodoxy, and the Physics of High Strangeness, a six-layer model for anomalous phenomenon. Now, the six layers, basically, they're saying that there's six layers of information that can be derived from these sorts of anomalous events. One, physical manifestations. Two, anti-physical effects. Three, psychological factors. Four, physiological factors. Five, psychic effects. And six, cultural effects. Now, they sort of chide the skeptics who say that UFO phenomenon and these sorts of things are too absurd to be real. And they, at the same time, they also criticize the believers who assume that it's necessarily space aliens. So they're kind of – Vallée calls himself a heretic among heretics because even the typical ufology crowd doesn't like his take on this because he doesn't go with the status quo that these are all space brothers, basically.
Yeah.
Now
– the ones who seeded us here and created us, you know.
Yeah.
The turtles all the way down extraterrestrial theory of creation.
Now, out of those six layers that I just listed – three of them really have a special interest to the thesis that I'm presenting. And, you know, the anti-physical effects, that kind of describes the sort of things that we see that contradict our normal understanding of physics. you know, things becoming fuzzy or invisible or dividing into more, two or more objects, merging with other objects, disappearing instantaneously, reappearing somewhere else, you know, being observed by witnesses but not detectable on radar. And the UFO literature is full of these sorts of accounts, even by highly trained military personnel. Leslie Keene's book, UFOs, that talks about generals and all kinds of military officials. Really excellent book on the UFO phenomena by Leslie Keene. Now, the one that the fifth category, where it's psychological effects, psychic effects, this really gets into the area of parapsychology. Hmm. Now, the UFO literature is similarly full of this sorts of stuff, telepathy, psychic communication, prophetic dreams, poltergeist phenomenon, levitations, you know, these phenomena maneuvering in anticipation of witnesses' thoughts. Literally, you know, I think it's going to go here and then it does. And you read contactees and abductees that have these experiences. And then a lot of these people seem to develop unusual abilities and have even been able to do healings and things like that. So there's all kinds of parapsychological effects. And then the sixth category, cultural. Now, this is concerned with public reactions, you know, how the phenomenon is received. And I think that this one is really the most interesting and has quite a bit of coherence with biblical theology. Now, yeah, I'll read a quote from Jacques Vallée from that essay. He says, "But perhaps we're facing something which is basically a social technology. Perhaps the most important effects from the UFO technology are the social ones, not the physical ones. In other words, the physical reality may serve only as a kind of triggering device to provide images for the witness to report. These perceptions are manipulated to create certain kinds of social effects," end quote. So that would explain, you know, things like why we see so many different kinds of ships. Mm-hmm. How that doesn't make any sense. You know, that would explain that. And it would explain why in the late 19th century, people saw airships that kind of look like the dirigibles that really did appear 30, 40 years later. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, by the 1940s, we were seeing Foo Fighters, these little balls. And then, you know, by the 50s, it was flying saucers.
Flying saucers, yeah.
And nowadays, it's these huge mile-wide delta-shaped craft. You know, and they seem to be kind of staying two steps ahead of what we might expect. And you know, that sort of makes sense if they are basing the imagery that we are seeing on what we expect or what, you know, it's sort of kind of staying two steps ahead and making it seem like technology that we would understand somewhat, just enough to kind of fly to seem realistic. Now, what I found the most interesting, so, you know, UFOs, this social effect idea. If you think about what have UFOs done, you know, without ever landing on the White House lawn, ever since the 40s, we've really been indoctrinated with science fiction, with this kind of alien savior mythos. And if you know, paid any attention to the hearings in Washington last week, you know, one of the things they brought out was this idea that the flying saucers were able to shut down the nuclear missile silos.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
And there's pretty good evidence that actually happened. And so a lot of people have this idea that the aliens are going to save us from a nuclear war, that they're here to protect us from wiping ourselves out. So there really is a savior mythos ingrained in the public mm-hmm. consciousness because of these sorts of ideas. Now, if you think about the other social effects, UFOs have fostered a general acceptance of life in space, of non-human intelligence, you know. In the past, you know, centuries ago, these kind of phenomenon probably would have confirmed somebody's religious beliefs. Perhaps Constantine, who saw a symbol in the sky, mm-hmm. you know, maybe that is the same sort of phenomenon that was seen as a silver disc at the miracle of the sun in Fatima. You know, these things have had far-reaching religious impact from Constantine accepting Christianity as the state religion in Rome. You know, that kind of progressed. Constantine, he decriminalized Christianity, and he later really became the
yes.
state religion.
Yeah, it was Theodosius who actually made it the state religion. Yeah,
but it kind of got started with that idea. And you know, look at this. It was actually confirmed in his mind by something he saw in the sky. Okay, you know, an unidentified aerial phenomenon. Same thing with Fatima, which has, you know, convinced a lot of people of the Catholic accounting. So these things are driven by occurrences, you know, unidentified flying objects, basically. So these are the kind of conclusions Vallée is talking about. You know, it's having a social influence. And if you think about, you know, some of the statistics from the polls I've read, right now in America, 49% of the population reports believing that aliens have visited the Earth. That's almost half of Americans already think that this is true. So here's another quote from Vallée from the essay. It says, "Everything works as if UAPs, unidentified aerial phenomenon, were the products of a technology that integrates physical and psychic phenomenon and primarily affects cultural variables in our society through manipulation of physiological and psychological parameters in the witnesses. The purpose of this technology may be cultural manipulation, possibly but not necessarily under the control of a form of non-human intelligence, in which case the physiological and psychological effects are a means to that end."
Hmm. Along those lines, I had the pleasure of talking to Nick Redfern, who wrote the book
Final Events.
Thank you. Yes, I was going to say Final Disclosure, but I knew that wasn't right, about the Collins Elite. And you touch on the Collins Elite in Exo Vaticana, which is a government think tank, allegedly, tasked with researching this this phenomenon. What did they conclude, and what did your research disclose about the Collins Elite? In other words, are you convinced, as Nick Redfern was, that this group actually exists?
Yeah, I think they do. You know, Heiser reviewed that book, and he kind of tended to think it might be possible that the way that the Collins Elite were presented to Nick was an attempt to sort of discredit Christianity, maybe.
Well, that's the same conclusion I got from reading the book, so I'm not surprised Mike reached that conclusion.
Now, that may be true. It would seem to be, because some of it is, it seems to be oversimplified. Now, some of it could be misrepresented as well. But, you know, the general idea is that, you know, the FBI had been watching Jack Parsons. And, you know, Jack Parsons was a Jet Propulsion Laboratory rocket scientist who was actually a devotee of Aleister Crowley, who set up the Lodge of Thelema in California, openly doing, you know, occultic satanic rituals, basically.
With L. Ron Hubbard, of all people.
With L. Ron Hubbard, did the Babylon working out in the desert, which some people seem to think might have instigated the modern UFO phenomenon by opening some sort of portal.
I like Heiser's take on it, though. If the demons that we can, the powers and principalities that we face, were waiting on a boob like Jack Parsons to open the door for them, then there's not much to worry about.
Right. Yeah. It is kind of fanciful to think that they actually need human beings to do these things, to allow them to function. You know, I don't know that that's true, but I suspect that human beings can do things that might assist them and certainly egg them on.
Sure.
So, you know, I don't really know about it. I don't think that the Babylon Working is responsible for the modern UFO phenomenon, but it could be responsible for, you know, a portion of it, perhaps. You know, but Jack Parsons, of course, blew up in some kind of chemical fire in his home.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows how that really happened? It was an accident, or maybe God took him out. I don't know.
Or one of his the entities that he summoned just got tired of taking orders from this lowly human.
The CIA.
Yeah. Well, who knows?
The government really did have really good reasons to be concerned when one of your top rocket scientists is doing occult rituals with L. Ron Hubbard in the desert.
Yeah.
It's kind of a security risk. So they were tracking him, you know, and they got interested in, you know, people that are that smart, Okay, to be a rocket scientist, you can't be a dummy.
Right. Yeah.
So there's got to be some real power to this occult stuff. All right. You know, somebody like Jack Parsons is not going to waste his time on something that's completely fanciful and has nothing to it. Obviously, there's something real about it, or people of his intelligence wouldn't be involved in it. Now, ultimately, it's really stupid because, you know, you're sacrificing eternity by signing up to join the wrong team.
Mm-hmm.
But by doing that, you're trading some momentary worldly success and power for eternity, which is ultimately the most foolish thing you could ever do.
Well, and again,
so I don't want to give too much credit.
Yeah, and again, stupid to think that if you're calling on these entities that are far older and more powerful than you are, that you're somehow going to be able to control them by speaking right. the right words in the right order. I just.
And his end, you know, bears that out. He
yes.
burned alive in a house fire uh-huh. in his basement. And Aleister Crowley died a penniless drug addict on the streets of England. So, mm-hmm. you know, none of these guys end well. And, you know, it just shows you that it's not worth it. And, you know, and unfortunately, that bad ending was only the beginning for them.
Yes. Yeah. they knew the real truth about a second after their hearts stopped beating. So
unless they had some sort of deathbed conversion, which is always
possible. Yeah.
And so anyway. But the Collins Elite kind of got their start from that. You know, supposedly these high-ranking military guys started going, hey, there's something going on with this occult stuff, and it seems to be connected to the UFO stuff, and, you know, let's start keeping tabs on it. And, you know, that makes sense to me that they would do that. And, you know, Nick reproduced the FBI reports where they were tracking Parsons. And so it makes sense to me that, you know, high-ranking military officials who were probably Christians, you know, and That that makes sense to me. Now, as the story develops, it gets a little more dubious. And like I said, you know, I think maybe somebody might be trying to punk them out a little bit, and some of it might get misrepresented as it goes. But, you know, I've looked a lot of the books that Nick mentioned. He listed a bunch of books that the Collins Elite were looking at. Biblical Demonology by Merrill Unger was one of them. One about Assyrian and Babylonian entities. I went and bought every single book that he listed, and I have them in my library now and referred to them in the book Exo Vaticana, some of them.
So there was literally a government think tank that was researching the history or researching what they could find out about ancient Sumerian and Babylonian demons.
Yeah, they were.
And trying to make some sense out of the UFO phenomenon in that context.
And it makes a lot of sense because and some of that material was in the book Exo Vaticana. I listed a whole string of Assyrian entities and you know, kind of. Tom and I worked together on that because Tom has done some research in those areas as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of worked pretty well getting all that together and because his work and mine intersected. And we were able to, I think, to present a case that's kind of unique in the literature because we did cover a lot of ground. I mean, there are entities and there are accounts going back into the ancient world that sound virtually identical to the sorts of things that alien abductees talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So in my mind, it's not very controversial that these are not space aliens, that these are the same entities that these people have been talking about for centuries, for
sure.
thousands of years even.
And another secular researcher, the late Dr. John Mack of Harvard, listed some, if I remember correctly, something like 36 points of correlation between the accounts of survivors of ritual abuse and those mm-hmm. who claim to be abducted by aliens. Again,
there was a conference at MIT
right.
on abduction, and Mac was there. Yeah, it was satanic ritual abuse and alien abduction. And mm-hmm. yeah, it's just the confluence was remarkable.
Yeah. There is obviously a strong push in the secular realm for the government to come clean about what it knows, you know, and, you know, I'll put that in air quotes because who knows what the government knows. We certainly aren't on, you know, have an inside track to anything. I don't think, even what we learned about the Collins Elite from Nick Redfern's book might, as Mike Heiser speculated. And as I suspect, have been put out there just to make, you know, Christians in general look foolish. Certainly the theological conclusions of the Collins Elite If you read Final Events, which I recommend, you'll see that the theological conclusions of the Collins elite was, you know, really bad scholarship. I mean, for all the resources the government has to put into studying these things, anyone who reads the Bible would you tell that the Collins elite was way off base.
The things like stealing souls and all those kind of ideas.
Yeah, and that we need, and that we need to go to sort of back to an Old Testament theology where we need to follow a list
dominion.
Of rules.
It was really dominionism.
It was dominionism, yeah. and it seemed more like an attempt to frighten people into you know, what those evil Christians might want to do. You know, they really want to take over the world and force us all to live according to the rules because they think if we don't, we're all going to be have our souls sucked away by space aliens or demonic space aliens.
Yeah, well, there is a portion of the American church, you know, there was a theologian named Rush Dooney, who really are dominionists.
Right,
so
sure.
it's possible that some high-ranking generals or, you know, officials in the CIA or somebody who were part of the Collins elite were in one of those churches.
Well, it's you're right. And, you know, this is a topic that we've tackled on A View from the Bunker quite often over the last 5 years or so. I mean, to the point where I've actually lost some friends over it because they thought I was, obsessed. But I do think that there is a danger of conflating patriotism and Christianity and equating political dominion over the world with serving God, you know, serving Jesus Christ. You couldn't be more wrong. That was not what we were called to do.
Well, that's absolutely the error of the Catholic Church that I wrote about in Petrus Romanus, this idea that we can set up Christ's kingdom ourselves and coerce people into it, which never is going to work. You can't coerce someone into loving you or even believing in you, really. So this idea that we can have an Inquisition and torture the Jews into conversion, this is what the Catholics tried to do. And, you know, of course, the story is infamous now. And, you know, it's a blight on the Christian faith that there was ever a thing called the Inquisition or even the Crusades. I mean, this idea that we can coerce people into Christianity is antithetical to the message of the New Testament. And so, you know, it's just a grave error.
Yeah, yeah. And has worked its way, as you found through your research into the Collins elite, as Nick Redfern found in his book, Final Events, has worked its way even into the so-called study of extraterrestrials.
Yeah, I think the Collins elite, you know, so it's possible that we have some dominionist government officials who have the best of intentions. And they thought, well, you know, if we get everybody into the church, we can prevent these entities from taking over our country or whatnot. And maybe they had good intentions in their thoughts. Now, the reason, you know, another reason I take them seriously is that, you know, we have Ray Boucher, who is a Lutheran theologian, and we actually talked to Ray a little bit via email, and you know, he was on the Future Quake show.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. That's an excellent interview. You should look it up in the future.
Is.
In fact,
yeah.
I'll put a link to that in the show notes here so you can listen to that later, because Ray Boucher's interview with Dr. Future was excellent.
It was, and he's a very genuine guy. I think he's telling the truth. And they approached him, okay, back when they were trying to figure out this phenomenon. It sounded like they had let the genie out of the bottle. I think they did make contact with these entities. And they were doing some sort of psychic power, cultic ritual type stuff for defense purposes, and it got out of their hands where they couldn't control it. And they actually contacted a theologian because Ray, you know, was involved in Fortean research. He was in a group that studied paranormal phenomenon. And, you know, they saw, well, here's a, you know, a theologian that can help us, you know, maybe put the cork back in the bottle or whatever. I don't know that he was able to do that. And, you know, there are various sources. Tom did talk to some high-ranking military officials. Tom Horn does have some connections in the military-industrial complex. And according to him, that there is – I don't know how much of this I'm supposed to talk about, but I'm going to go ahead and throw a little bit out there. From what Tom told me, that there is the Collins elite is very real, and but there is an element of it that went ahead and went over to the dark side. This stuff that they uncorked or whatever is powerful and had some benefit to it in the short term, and there's part of that group that actually went with it. And I think there's another part that didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I think that's where we're at. And that's why you don't really get a consistent answer when some of this, some of the group has kind of gone rogue, basically, and they're not Christians.
Well, that's that's entirely possible. And that really tracks with the research that Peter Lavenda did for his Sinister Forces three book set, in which he basically says that the United States government or elements within it literally sold its collective soul following World War II in order to stay ahead of the Russians.
Yeah,
in this type of research. And it's very possible that some group within this think tank just said, you know, maybe we could put this to our use.
And, yeah, I think they did. Hmm. Yeah. And, you know, the ministeric goats and all these programs kind of evidence that. And but, you know, some of the other things, I mean, just some of the false flag events that we know the government has done, a lot of the lies they've told to start wars and stay in wars, you know. The thing is the government is not a monolithic entity either.
And, right.
You know, a lot of our politicians don't even really know what's going on any more than we do, I don't think. I think that, you know, Eisenhower's warning about the military-industrial complex, I think that's very real. You know, I think that there is an elite, you know, people really with the people with all the money, and really probably the defense contractors, the big major corporations, the
bankers,
the CEOs of the Halliburtons and McDonnell Douglases and Boeings. And, you know, these guys probably have, you know, and them and maybe some of the generals. I mean, you think about a general's in this thing for his whole career. The president's in there 4 years, 8 years tops. You know, these generals and these defense contractors know a lot more than the president does. I'm sorry. It's just a logical deduction. It makes complete sense that they do. And it shouldn't be surprising to us that our government officials aren't necessarily running the show, because we have so many billions of dollars tied up in these underground projects that the president has no idea about when he comes into office. And if they don't tell him, he doesn't find out. And, you know, when you think about the sorts of things that people will do when they are afraid. Now, I think that the Cold War really was something that drove these people, and it was fear, and some of them had really good intentions. But, yeah, I think that they were willing to do things that they probably should not have done in order to what they probably thought they were doing was, you know, protecting our country, protecting our way of life. But in the process, they probably betrayed that, the principles that way of life is founded on.
Yeah. Sharon and I have watched a couple of television programs recently on the Roku. I think they're both available at Amazon, Amazon Prime or Netflix or both. Hulu, it could be Hulu. I forget where we've seen these now. One, it was a BBC America miniseries from a couple of years back called The State Within. And revolved around a false flag. And then we just got done watching the 13 episodes of Rubicon, which was on the AMC network about 3 years ago.
Okay.
And which involved powerful men within the intelligence community, wealthy bankers, and, you know, connection to a prominent companies within the military and industrial complex, or military intelligence complex, whatever you want to call it. The company's names are intended to sound very much like something that really exists right now. One was the Armitage Corporation. Another one is called Atlas McDowell. You know, just things that sound like they're real and pretty close to the plot lines are plausible enough to be really chilling. So worth checking out. Getting a little bit farther afield from Exo Vaticana, though, and I want to get back to something that has popped up here recently. And due to various things going on here in the bunker and the lower level, which is a little higher humidity than we would like last couple of weeks, the hearing, or rather the release of the movie produced and promoted by Stephen Greer, who's a very prominent ufologist pushing for, again, government disclosure. The movie Sirius, what was your take on the film? What's it about, and how did you interpret what Stephen Greer was putting out?
Well, you know, the whole film is really kind of got an overarching conspiracy theory, and You know, like even the promotional posters say it's not about proving that ETs exist. It's about uncovering how they get here. It's time for you to know. Now, what he's talking about, one of Greer's driving motivations is that the government has free energy technology and the evil, you know, he calls them misanthropic sociopaths are running the planet into the ground. He's talking about the oil industry and, you know, this whole thing. So he thinks that they have a source of free energy, and that they got it from UFOs, I think, you know, from crashed UFO technology and whatnot. So, you know, he even, you know, puts in footage of 9/11 as an inside job and all this sort of stuff. So the film is really kind of framed with a big overarching conspiracy theory that the government has alien technology and is suppressing it from us so they can continue to sell us oil. You know, the richer get richer and the poor will stay the same and they maintain the status quo. Now, you know, right slap in the middle of all this, he has all this testimony from different, you know, military officials. And a lot of the footage, the interview footage, was stuff I'd seen before. One of the groundbreaking UFO documentaries that I liked was called, Out of the Blue, Out of the Blue. And, you know, they actually used a lot of the same footage from Out of the Blue, which I saw probably back in 2005 or something. Hmm. And interestingly, they did have Corrado Balducci, the Catholic demonologist we've been talking about, and he's talking about superior beings coming, so they actually had him in the film. But, you know, so they show a lot of good evidence to believe that there's a real UFO phenomenon. The engineering and the physics behind what they claim for free energy is very dubious. You'd be hard-pressed to find many engineers that were impressed by their explanation of that. You know, it's just kind of, I think it's kind of wacky, to be honest with you. Now, I'm not saying it's impossible, but, there's some really, I put out a review of the movie like the day after it came out, and it's incoherent in some really major ways. The first thing that Greer shoots himself in the foot because he presents pretty good evidence to believe in UFOs that, you know, might convince a reasonable person, but then he always ties it into his kind of wacky spiritual beliefs. You know, there's close encounters of the first kind where you see a UFO, the second kind, you know, where there might be some kind of physical trace. The third kind is when you see the beings that are in the UFO, the mm-hmm. occupants. The fourth kind is like abductions or some kind of contact.
Right.
And these were the ones that J. Allen Hynek came up with. And of course, that's where the movie Close Encounters got its title. Now, Greer coined a new one, Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind. And they make a big deal out of this, promoting CE5 in this movie. Now, what is CE5? CE5 is basically sitting lotus style in the desert, channeling aliens, supposedly.
Okay. Now,
he's got this cult called the CSETI group. And I'm going to call it a cult because that's what it is.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they basically are just kind of wacky new agers who think that they can actually call down these UFOs. And they show this in the film. And they're kind of showing off. It shows them all sitting in a circle out in the middle of the desert, chanting, hitting these little Buddhist bells and stuff. And then all of a sudden lights pop up in the sky and they show it. So, I mean, they're definitely portraying the idea that they can call these entities down. Okay, so what does this do to the coherence of the movie? Well, the whole premise of the movie is that the government has this technology they got from the aliens that will save the planet and give us free energy. But they won't give it to us. Mm-hmm. So we need to have all this disclosure and all these hearings. We need to force the government to come clean. But wait a minute, Steve. You can channel the aliens. You can call them down at will, right? Well, why don't you just ask them for it? So it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So something's not right about all this.
So his theory behind all of this, what does the title Sirius come from? Is that where he believes that they're coming from?
I guess. I mean, I don't think I ever really got that, but I guess that's what he thinks.
Or maybe he just wants to be taken seriously.
Yeah. a lot of people had fun with that.
I can imagine. So there were some hearings last week, and again, due to extracurricular activities, involving hardware. The I didn't have an opportunity to watch these, but Sharon dialed in. Was watching some of these videos on the internet. There were some hearings involving former members of the United States Congress who also seem to think that the United States government and governments around the world are harboring secrets about the existence of extraterrestrial life. What's going on, and what are they hoping to achieve?
Well, this is, you know, Stephen Bassett's disclosure project. Ayn Greer, I think, has been tied up with that a little bit. But I think Bassett kind of tried to separate himself from Greer because of all the wacky
spiritual stuff. I can't imagine why.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that is also a problem with these hearings. Now, I think the idea behind the hearings is sound. I think it's good, you know, and they have some really good witnesses. You know, ex-military officials and whatnot. Richard Dolan, I think, is a very good scholar. He's a historian. He's written a really excellent accounting of the history of the UFO phenomenon, especially through an American lens, you know, the national security issue. And I think, you know, his scholarship is stellar, and he was there. Now, the problem with this hearing is that there was over 40 hours of testimony. Now, I listened to quite a bit of it, and what you get, I think that you probably had 2 days. You probably had 16 hours of legitimate testimony and a whole bunch of speculative nonsense trashed in with it. And it's exactly what you don't want to do when you're trying to convince somebody new to the subject that there's a real phenomenon. And that's really the purpose of this, is to get the government and the Congress interested in it. So you get these people that come in there, you know, like a government official who was flying a plane, a pilot, and he says, yeah, I saw this. You know, I personally witnessed this and this and this. And, you know, that's like really solid, you know, case. But then all of a sudden, Linda Moulton Howe or somebody will break in and start talking about psychic powers from the aliens or something. It just like completely discredits a lot of it. And that's kind of what happened. So, you know, Greer kind of kept himself under control pretty well, but some of the people didn't. And they got a little wacky. And, you know, they start talking about communing with ETs and vibrational wavelengths. I mean, it gets wacky. And this is exactly the sort of thing that they don't need to do when they're doing this in D.C. So that was a problem. And there was just a lot of speculative stuff. There was a guy who Dolan interviewed. Now, and I listened to the whole thing. So here's a guy who claims to be an ex-CIA agent. He says he's on his deathbed. Now, according to him, a few years ago, he fed some information to Linda Moulton Howe, and then he was approached and threatened while he was at the grocery store. So he wants to stay anonymous. Well, one thing doesn't make sense to me is he says he only has 3 months to live, and he wants to get all this off his chest. So why does he need to be anonymous now if he's only got 3 months to live? That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But supposedly Richard Dolan and Linda Howe have vetted this guy's credentials, but we haven't been able to see that. So, you know, it's hard for me to take somebody seriously who's claiming to be a CIA agent who met with Eisenhower and J. Edgar Hoover. And I have no evidence that he ever worked for the government. I don't even know his name. But he claims that he actually flew to Area 51. He saw the Roswell ship. He saw all these other flying saucers and hangars. He claims that there were live ETs inside Area 51 working with the government, that his boss actually had an interview with an alien gray. So, you know, here we have this guy making these really, you know, out there claims. Now, I don't think that that's really the sort of material they need to be showing these Congress people who don't even really believe the UFO phenomenon yet. You know, I think that they way overstep their bounds. I think they should just kind of rein it in and establish that there's really something going on, and just use the kind of cases that are well evidenced, and you know, just have that you can sort of prove that there's a basis for, instead of all these more speculative, fanciful accounts of the government employing alien, you know, grays and whatnot, the sorts of things we just don't have any proof of.
Diving into the really, really murky waters of the now, unprovable.
So that's my criticism of it, is they really need to hone it down. They could probably filter out 70% of the testimony that they presented last week, and have a much better, more convincing case for the sorts of people they're trying to convince. So that's a problem. a lot of the wackiness of the UFO field filters in there, and they should know better. They really should. It doesn't take a lot of discernment to figure that out. Now, one of the interesting things, you know, for Exo Vaticana and Tom and I is Tom interviewed Guy Consolmagno, a Vatican astronomer, and he got a little upset about the way he was presented in the book, and he went on his blog and wrote, "There are no Vatican UFO secrets. Neither I nor anyone else has any evidence that extraterrestrials exist. We do not believe Jesus is a hybrid or any of these bizarre claims this author makes." So what he was talking about is there's actually a book that he wrote, that Consolmagno wrote, that the Vatican has pulled. You can't even get a copy anymore. It's called Intelligent Life in the Universe, Catholic Belief in the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligent Life. You can't even find a used copy. I think they bought all the used ones up. Now, in that book, he did talk about this idea that, you know, I mentioned exotheology in the beginning. I was talking about the idea that, you know, if there are aliens, did Jesus have to incarnate as an alien to die for them? These questions go way back. Mm-hmm. You know, these are not new questions. But Consolmagno suggested in his book, you know, and he's asking it as a, you know, an intellectual exercise, but he says, you know, that maybe Jesus came not only as the Son of Man, but also as a child of alien races. You know, so he says things like that. And he's the one that went out in public and talked about baptizing ETs, no matter how many tentacles it has. Mm-hmm. He said these sorts of things. So, you know, he objects to the way he was presented. But, you know, the thing is what he's saying isn't true. You know, the idea that the Vatican has no secrets about UFOs. Well, for one thing, and, you know, neither I or anyone I know has any evidence. Well, Monsignor Balducci said it was a certainty, mm-hmm. based on what he knew. Okay. And he's a Vatican official. So, you know, our book is not based on the testimony of any one person. So he kind of, you know, he's part of the Vatican. So he just happens to have to get the brunt of what his organization, you know, of the criticisms we're leveling at them. Because, you know, while they might not have a monolithic opinion, they do present themselves as a monolithic organization, as the authority. I mean, they claim that they are the religious authority of the world. And, you know, they used to say things like, if you didn't follow the Pope, you weren't even saved. Now, they've backed off a lot of that, but, you know, they've never really taken it back. So the thing that's the other attorney, Daniel Sheehan, who was the lead counsel for the Jesuit order in America. Now, a lot of people think that he is a Jesuit, and he's not. He's kind of a New Ager. He actually slipped up during the hearings and made some wacky comments about increasing our vibrational energy so that we can commune with the ETs. So he's not a Jesuit, but I mean, some of the Jesuits would say things like that too, probably. But Sheehan worked for the Jesuit order. He's a pretty high-powered attorney. He's defended some really big cases. In fact, interestingly, in the UFO area, he defended John Mack when Harvard put him up for review for his abduction stuff. Uh-huh. But so he was the former lead counsel for the Jesuit order in America. Now, what happened is Jimmy Carter, when he was president, had seen a UFO. He's one of our presidents who, you know, will admit to seeing a genuinely unexplained UFO. Now, Carter really wanted to find out more about this. And this is where I was saying, you know, our presidents don't know what's going on necessarily because the military industrial complex isn't going to tell them. NASA wouldn't tell Carter anything. The CIA wouldn't tell Carter anything. Carter went to Sheehan and asked him to get the Vatican records. And so Sheehan asked the, you know, as lead counsel of the Jesuit order in America, asked the Vatican for what they had, and they wouldn't give it to him. And he thought, well, this must be a mistake. And then he said, you know, this is for President Carter, you know, this is for, you know, top secret clearance only. We're not going to spread it around or anything. And they still wouldn't give it to him. Hmm. And he actually testified that, you know, under oath at this sitting's hearing on disclosure. So that really does seem to controvert Consolmagno's claim that there are no Vatican UFO secrets. You know, to think that the Vatican doesn't have any information about UFOs is absurd, because you think about, we're dealing with the largest, running bureaucracy in the history of the world, arguably. I think so. You know, at least since the 6th century AD or so, if not going back a little further than that, they've been collecting records of any kind of anomalous supernatural phenomenon You know, literally probably worldwide, maybe more limited during the Middle Ages and stuff, but, you know, they've been cataloging any kind of claim to be a miracle or any sort of thing seen in the sky. They've been keeping records of this and investigating it. That's part of what they do. That's how they authenticate Marian apparitions and miracles. They send out a whole group of scholars to look into these things. So to tell, you know, us that they don't have any records about, you know, unidentified things in the sky, it would be absurd.
A little disingenuous, yeah.
Right. And, you know, so obviously they do have things, and the fact that they're not giving them up is suggestive that they know something they don't want us to know.
Where do you see this going? What ultimately do you think is the end game? Why is the Vatican, what is the Vatican preparing for?
Well, you know, one of the theses in Petrus Romanus is that they did turn a corner as a spiritual entity when they became a worldly power. And unfortunately, it's the same sort of thing we were talking about with dominionism. I mean, they really were the first dominionists with the idea that, you know, Christendom is, you know, the Pope was like a king. He lorded it over the world there during the Middle Ages, and he literally made kings and broke kings. And, you know, their days of that kind of power are no longer here, but they still yield, you know, they still wield a sword, I mean to say, and they still are, they still have a seat at the United Nations. So they are still a political worldly power, which I think is somewhat inconsistent with their mission. So where do I see this going? Well, I think that because of that sort of thing, that has corrupted them to the core. And I think they're wide open to be deceived. Now, and I look at biblical prophecy, you know, it does tell us to expect a great deception. And I think that we are closer each day to that, and that's uncontroversial. But I think it's really possibly in our lifetime. You know, if the Malachi prophecy is true, it'll be during the papacy of Pope Francis. You know, I don't know if that's the case. Pope Francis is uniquely positioned because he actually swore in Jose Funes, the leader of the VORG, the leader of the Vatican Observatory Research Group. He brought him into the Jesuit order in Argentina. So the leader, the president of the VORG, is from Argentina, and he was sponsored into the Jesuits by the Pope, Pope Francis. So they are very intimately connected. So I'm sure he's on the inside of all that. You know, so we look at Bible prophecy and we see a one world religion, and you know, you wonder how the world's going to be united. Well, I think it takes a nonlinear event. And, you know, one of the things that we speculate about in Exo Vaticana is that could be some sort of alien disclosure. It could be a lot more subtle than ships flying down over major cities. It could be that, or it could be something like evidence of panspermia, maybe, that, and Heiser has written that. Heiser wrote an essay on panspermia that where he speculated that it could actually be the impetus for a one world religion. And so Mike thinks that's a potential. And so, you know,
and he's also, and he's also written about the danger in Christians getting too tied to the intelligent design movement, because it's that would be fairly easy to hijack into a discussion or a support of a panspermia.
Certainly would be. Yeah, and the Catholics already kind of gone there. You know, I quoted a Catholic astronomer who wrote a book in the 70s, and literally this was approved Catholic literature. It had this stamp inside of it where it had been screened by the hierarchy. And this guy, this is a pretty much a direct quote. He said, "We should not be surprised if we found out that life on Earth was started from an alien refuse pile." I'm not kidding.
And so that was approved. And again,
just wrapper on the ground or something. And we an alien refuse pile.
And just to drive home that point again, that was approved, and that was officially approved by the Vatican.
Absolutely approved
for publication.
Catholic literature.
Yeah. Wow.
And that was from the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So this idea is not all that new. And so, yeah, not only are they willing to accept Darwinism, they'll accept that we evolved from alien refuse. Mm. And, you know, to me, that's really blasphemous, because, you know, you think about a painter. Well, how could you insult an artist by saying, well, you know what? your painting looks like somebody just threw some paint up against the wall. It's just like somebody spilled a can of paint. That's your art. And, you know, God is the creator of life. And we look at the level of intricacy and complex design in just a small cell, you know, and to think that we're going to attribute this to randomness and you know, just garbage, you know, evolving by accidental forces and natural selection, to me is like the greatest insult you could give to the creator. And, you know, I wouldn't want to be in their shoes when they face him.
Well said. You know, and it's amazing after hearing and having talked with you numerous times about the research that you've done for Exo Vaticana and for Petrus Romanus, that there are some critics out there who are taking shots at you and Tom Horn for being apologists for the Vatican.
Yeah, they don't get it, do they?
No, it's a little bit puzzling. Chris, we've gone about an hour and 10 minutes, and I know we've only scratched the surface of the topic, but we'll wrap up here just to keep this to a manageable length for folks. There are so many other things that we could talk about, and we'll have to do this again soon to you know, dig into some other topics related to this general trend that we're seeing, you know, where it appears that the thoughts of in our culture are being guided to expect this type of disclosure, and to find that the world's largest Christian denomination, the world's largest bureaucracy, is preparing the ground for this is a bit disturbing. But I think it behooves us as Christians to educate ourselves as to what's going on, and then compare that truth against the Bible, which is our ultimate and only infallible source of truth, to see how it stacks up. Where do people find a copy of the book you and Tom have produced, Exo Vaticana?
Well, of course, it's available at all the usual outlets, Amazon.com. But I think you can go get a paper book at, I think Books A Million has them and Barnes & Nobles has them. I actually walked into my local one and signed a bunch of them for them just the other day. If you live in Raleigh, go to Crabtree Valley Mall. But Tom has a website, exovaticana.com, and of course, Raiders News Update. And I think Tom has a data DVD you can pick up if you buy it through Survival Mall through him that has a lot of source documents and various MP3s and even videos. So if you're interested in that, you can buy it from Tom.
And there are videos as well, interviews with Gary Stearman at Prophecy in the News, Sid Roth, It's Supernatural at exovaticana.com. I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well as the other links that we referred to. Again, refer you to the interview between Ray Boucher and Dr. Future on Future Quake. We'll find a link to that and post that so you can hear that as well. That's just good
stuff. Yeah.
Good foundational stuff as background for this discussion. Chris Putnam, not only the author of Exo Vaticana and Petrus Romanus, contributor to the History Channel, and becoming a semi-regular guest on Coast to Coast AM. Chris, it's an honor to have you give up some of your time on this beautiful Saturday afternoon for us.
Thank you, Derek. It was my pleasure.
Without making this a contentious section of the program, there are those who've raised some questions about the need to dig into this particular topic, and some who've just flat out said that it's delving into science fiction speculation under the guise of Christianity, and as such is straying into the realm of heresy. And I just think that is very close-minded, short-sighted thinking. The phenomenon is real. There are too many people who have reported experiences to discount the phenomenon altogether. There are many accounts within the UFO phenomenon that are, can be dismissed as hoaxes or perhaps as social experiments, shall we say, by elements within the United States government, the CIA's mind control experimentation, the dosing of unwitting suspects with mind altering drugs, things like that. I've done a couple of programs on the efforts of the United States government to perpetuate the UFO myth. But there are enough accounts out there that don't fall into those categories, those easily explained, the category of the easily explained, to discount the phenomenon altogether. And as Christians, as believers in an omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent deity, the creator of all things, our worldview should be able to explain them. And while we can't pretend to know 100% what's going on, we can at least put forward some theories that have some value in it, perhaps explaining what's going on. Now, when those theories contradict Scripture, when the evidence doesn't fit with what we see in Scripture, then you have to discard the theory. You cannot distort Scripture or cherry pick or proof text, if you will, in order to fit your theory into a scriptural context. You have to let the whole body of Scripture speak, and if your theory fits into that without contradicting it, then it has some value, at least until more facts become known. Those who have raised criticism about those who are delving into the field of Christian ufology, those who are suggesting that perhaps the Nephilim would have some role to play in the end times, are heretics for suggesting, I think, are perhaps closing their minds to where Scripture may lead or may offer some explanation for things that are typically classified by secular viewers as unexplained or unexplainable. Until next time, remember, we wrestle not against flesh and blood. I'm Derek Gilbert, and this is A View from the Bunker.